Welcome to Abergavenny Baptist Church.
Life, faith, together.
Jesus said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love." I'm just going to jump to the end of the chapter. The end of this section. I know this isn't on the screen, but I'm going to add it in anyway. "You did not choose me, but I chose you." You didn't choose me. I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Can anyone remember how that finishes? This is my command. Love one another. Love each other. I moved a year ago we live in Newport, moved March last year after 8 years in London, and since then I've been in therapy. We love living in London. We had 8 years. I was the minister of a church, a place called Herne Hill. Hands up, anyone who knows where Herne Hill is in London? Ooh, wow. Yeah. So Herne Hill, for those of you who don't know, is about a 10-15 minute walk into Brixton, Camberwell, a little bit further to Peckham. So it's that kind of part of south central London. But also borders on Dulwich, which is very sort of upper middle class, very affluent, et cetera, et cetera. Three very big private schools there, et cetera, et cetera. So a real sort of just an extraordinary part of London to live in, with all the fun and diversity and of places like Brixton and Peckham, Camberwell. And then I can be on a train at Loughborough Junction Station, which was about a 5 minute walk from the house, and in 10 minutes I'm on the South Bank, and we can wander up and down the South Bank or carry on up into the city, et cetera, et cetera. Just an amazing time. We absolutely, absolutely love living in London, and we're not ready to leave. It was clear that God had other plans for us, and we followed that, but we weren't ready to leave. I cried every day for the first 2 weeks after we arrived here, and intermittently for a while since, which is why I've been in therapy. And my therapists have been Countryfile and Escape to the Country. So I've suddenly found myself watching these two programs, more recently Escape to the Country. If you'd have said to me 5 years ago, "You're going to be hooked on Escape to the Country," I'd have said, "You'd be joking. Why would I want to see people wandering around houses and et cetera, et cetera?" And the reason it's been good therapy for me is having moved from a place like London, an urban centre, which is vibrant and... Has anybody lived in London and kind of loved living in London and kind of get it exactly? It's just the most extraordinary... Some people hate it. Some people go and they go for a day. I don't want to... Because it's busy and it's all kinds of stuff. But it is a city like no other city. It's not a slightly bigger version of Manchester or Birmingham or all those sorts of things, much as I love those places. It is a world city, and everywhere you go, there's history around every corner, etc., etc., etc. But it is quite an artificial place to live. You know, we're near the countryside. They have glorious parks. So within a short distance of where we live, there's Dulwich Park. And these are pretending to be the countryside, but they're not really the countryside. They're very highly developed parks that the Victorians were very good at, and so on and so forth. And you live this kind of artificial existence. And so coming out of the city, I had to recalibrate that I'm not living in the city anymore, because I'm a recovering country boy. Because I grew up in rural Suffolk. Hands up anyone from Suffolk? Hey, whereabouts?
Ipswich.
Ipswich. I was the other end of the county, so Bungay. So Bungay, born and bred. Ipswich Town is my team. We're doing all right at the moment. Indeed. But I grew up in rural Suffolk, and I didn't... My dad was a school teacher, but I had friends who were farmers at school who grew up on farms, and we knew farmers, and we would go to farms. And on my dad's side up in Blackpool, most of the family on that side were all farming people, dairy farmers mostly, but sheep and battery hens when you're allowed to have battery hens. Thankfully, we don't have those anymore. But that was the world I kind of grew up in. And you get used to the rhythms of the countryside and the rhythms of nature. And one of the things I've realised that I've missed, we always used to have wellies. I've not had wellies for years, but wellies were a big deal in my world, and a good torch. In the city, you don't need a good torch because there's always light. But in the countryside, you always need a good torch and a big, long beam. But you kind of get used to... You just get used to the rhythms of the life and the seasons of things. So whenever in the summer holidays we would go up to stay with my great uncles on their farms in Blackpool, they didn't lay down their tools because, oh, the nephews and nieces have come to visit, it would be nice to sort of et cetera, et cetera. We fitted in with the rhythms of the farm because the cows need milking and feeding and the pigs need feeding and the harvest needs bringing in and all of those sorts of things. And you fit in to the rhythm of those things. And there is something about... that life that lends itself to submitting itself to a bigger thing that is going on. I was with the, some of you may be aware, there's a rural churches fellowship around a lot of the Monmouthshire churches, rural churches, and they had a lunch yesterday, and I was sat next to Pat. And Pat, I guess, would be in her 70s now, something like that, next to her husband. And Pat was a farmer's daughter, grew up on a farm. She married a farmer. She's only ever known farming. Doesn't have holidays, doesn't go away. They've got sheep. They don't have as many sheep as they used to. They've only got about 200 sheep now. But it's a way of life. It's not a hobby. It's not something you fit in around. It's everything. To submit our lives... You don't have in that world control of everything that you have control of. You submit your life to those you care for and those you are responsible for. And there is this other life out there which other people enjoy and are free to live. But you have embraced this life. And you give yourself to that life. And you submit yourself to that life and to the rhythms of that life and the seasons of that life. And it becomes natural and instinctive. And so when Jesus tells you a story about a vine and branches and a gardener, it makes perfect sense. Well, of course, vines, even if you don't have a vineyard, if you're not a farmer with a vineyard, but you know about seasons and rhythms and care for, that a good vine needs good branches to bear fruit, but only if there's a good gardener who knows what the gardener is doing. And any of you who are gardeners know there is pruning time. You have to prune if you want... good flowers next season, good fruit next season. Pruning is part of the thing. You're not punishing the plant. You're not got in for the plant. You're caring for the plant. It's responsible gardening to look after and to care for the plant. Jesus said, I'm the vine and my Father is the gardener. It's my Father who's the gardener. My Father is the unseen presence who cares for the vine, who tends the vine, who prunes the vine. It's the Father who does these things. The Father to whom we've just prayed, our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. It's the Father who watches over the vine. I'm the vine, you are the branches. And this is our life. This is who we are. We are defined by the branches that flow out of the life of Jesus being tended by the Father. This chapter 15, I am the vine, is the last of the I ams of Jesus that are mentioned in John's Gospel. Anybody know how many I ams there are in John's Gospel? It varies, but traditionally there are the special number, the special biblical number, the number of perfection, seven. Yeah, seven. You can squeeze a couple more in there, but normally there are seven I ams. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the good shepherd. I am the bread of life, etc. And this is the last one. And the I am is an important, ego eimi in Greek, but if you were to hear it in Hebrew, it might sound a little bit like Yahweh. I am who I am. I will be who I will be. Yahweh, the good shepherd. Yahweh, the bread of life. Yahweh, the vine. God in our midst. And it's set in the middle of what's called Jesus' farewell discourse or farewell speech. He sat with his disciples. They're troubled. He's told them he's leaving. He's departing from them. They can't imagine a world where he's absent from them. What are they going to do? And he comforts them and shares with them and prays for them. And in this last I am, I'm the vine, my Father is the gardener, I am the vine, you are the branches. Remain in me as I remain in you. Without me, you can do nothing. With me, now that's a different story. With me, you can do all things. That as the branches remain in the vine, they remain connected to the life of Jesus. They take on the characteristics of Jesus. They bear the fruit of Jesus. They do the works of Jesus. They live a life consistent with the pattern of Jesus. For God so loved the world that he sent his one and only Son. Not to condemn the world, but the world might see that God in the flesh has come amongst us. The Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us, and we have beheld his glory, the glory of the one and only, full of grace and truth. You didn't choose him, but he did choose you. And he chose you to bear fruit for the glory of his kingdom and for his Father's glory. And he will prune and he will care so that you might be healthy and so that you might go on bearing fruit for him. The tricky bit for us often, though, is how do we know when we're being pruned? How do we know when the heavenly secateurs are coming into our own lives or into the life of a church? Because I'm guessing sometimes it's quite painful to have bits chopped off. We can resist that. We can react against that. We don't like that. But it's where the fruit won't come from. That's where God is most concerned, where the cleaning needs to come from, where that life of Jesus, where that love of Jesus is no longer being expressed. There's a lot of churches run very busy programs, but you'd struggle to find much love consistent with the glorious and richness of the love that we have encountered in Jesus Christ. It's very easy to mask busyness and equate it with the life and the works of Jesus. I came to a conclusion sort of after 24 years in local ministry, particularly more recently, that those who often shouted loudest about more Bible studies and more evangelism training and all of this kind of stuff, nothing wrong with any of those things, by the way, I'm all for it. But there was a certain constituency often within church life, because the more time I spend in Bible studies and more evangelism programs, and the more busy I am in church life, then the less likelihood that I might have to get involved in the messiness of somebody else's life. It's much easier to keep my Bible open and to do another Bible study than to close it and to step out into the messy life of somebody else and learn how to love. In my first church, I think God was doing some pruning there because Peter was part of our church. Peter was profoundly autistic at the time. He's exactly the same age as my oldest daughter, so at the time he would have been about 5 years old, 6 years old, and profoundly autistic, largely nonverbal, and didn't like loud noises, if you know anybody, etc. All of those sorts of things need routine and familiarity and all of those, etc., etc. And he was an absolute gift to us because he was the measure of our love. You don't know how good you are at loving until you have to love quite a difficult person, created in the image of God, loved eternally by the Father, and given as a gift to you, to us as a church. So what are you going to do? Somebody said, in churches we have the cool and the uncool people. The cool people have their services, the uncool people have their ministries. We farm off the uncool people into ministry. Oh, that's where you need to be. It's a lot easier if they're over there because they don't interfere with in here. They don't make life awkward for us. We can give them to special people to care for them. I discovered in my time in London in a multicultural church, people who'd come over from Jamaica in the 60s and 70s would walk into a church and very politely and in a very dignified South London way say, oh, I think you prefer the church down the road. I think you'll fit in there quite a bit more. They knew exactly what this was all about. I don't want the awkwardness of a black person in our congregation with your funny ways and what you might bring, let alone somebody disabled person or somebody who sits on the margins of things who truly tests our love. Somewhere it's written, it's easy to love your friends, people like you. The extraordinary gift of the church, of course, is its capacity to love its enemies. That's when you're now tapping into the love of Jesus. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing. Our capacity to love will only come if we root ourselves in Jesus and embrace the life of Jesus that is gifted to us and cooperate and submit ourselves to the Father who tends us and cares for us. I used to do a little bit of teaching on the Gospels at Spurgeon's College in London, and we would put the list of, I think I used to use Luke's Gospel, list of all the miracles, all the healing miracles of people. And it's an interesting list. In as much as, if you go through this, it's a good exercise to do, if you go through this list, I've now come to the conclusion it's less about making unwell people well, it's far more about enabling excluded people to become included in the life of the church. A woman with an issue of blood, a leper, somebody troubled by demons. All these people were excluded, Gentiles, all these people were excluded from the life of the church. The works, the extraordinary, miraculous works and power of Jesus is when those who have been told by the religious that they are excluded, that they are not welcome, that they need to sort their lives out, that they are an awkward and unwelcome presence in the life of the church, suddenly find themselves coming in and being part of us. Now, we are seeing the life of Jesus flowing up through the vine and out through the branches. This is my command, that you love and are known by love. That when people encounter our lives, whatever else they may feel about our funny ways, our peculiar people, strangers and aliens on this earth, our loyalty is one who is beyond the life of this planet. But in us they find love. Not a sentimental love, not a kind of wishy-washy love, but a gritty, earthy, Jesus-shaped love that goes out of its way to sit with the marginalized and stands up to the bullies and the tyrants and those who abuse their position and power. This is the glorious presence of the church. And who, from all eternity, we have been called and chosen to be. May God bless you in the glorious ministry to which he has invited you into, the life, the way of life. That the Spirit of God flowing through you will bring about, so that you might bear fruit, fruit that will last for all eternity. Amen. Amen.
Thank you for listening.
For more information, please visit our website, abergavenybaptist.co.uk.